Yo, what's up, everyone, and welcome to episode 48 of Buzzer Beaters. I am Eddie Aparicio. This is my co-host, Anthony Tuan Corral, and we are brought to you by GremlinsMedia.com. You can find us at GremlinsMedia.com, as well as any other popular podcast outlet you can think of, such as YouTube, Pandora, Spotify, Facebook, X, you name it. Whatever suits you, go ahead and find us. Just type in Gremlins Media. Or type in Buzzer Beaters, type in Anthony Corral, or Tuan Corral, whatever. You can find us, all right? So, but anyway, if this is your first time here, we are live, and we are live here for a reason, because we want to hear from you. We want to get your comments, your questions, your commentary. We dibble and dabble mainly in the NBA, but we also talk about the NCAA as well as the WNBA when it's pertinent. But right now, it's all about the NBA playoffs. We go about an hour to an hour and a half lately. Lately, it's been an hour and a half consistently. We're here to live, like I said, to go ahead and get your questions and comments. What we have slated for today is that we're going to go ahead and continue covering the four exciting second round playoff series that are still going, although there's only three of them left. We'll talk about that because Cleveland was just ousted last night by the Indiana Pacers. We'll go ahead and talk about what the Cleveland Cavaliers need to do, how they look as a team, you know, if they're close, any tweaks are needed. You know, Tuan will get into that when we get there. And then the second segment is something that we're going to expand upon that we introduced last week. And we introduced this concept of trying to determine objectively the best players in the NBA of all time and kind of take out the subjectivity of it and kind of use math around some of their statistics and accolades. And we're calling this, or we've called this, the Player Greatness Index, or PGI. And what we're going to talk about today is we're going to go ahead and show some of the comparisons of an episode that we did in episode 40 when we reviewed some of our Mount Rushmores of the point guards, shooting guards, small forwards, power forwards, centers that we subjectively picked. And then we're going to go ahead and compare what the numbers say, who the top four for each, you know, of those categories should be. So we're going to go ahead and talk about that. And that should pretty much take up most of the time. Now, you know, we are pretty much motivated to get this done within an hour because our Warriors are playing tonight in a possible elimination game. Although I'm the one who pretty much hold on to, you know, a hope, you know, and Tuan does too. Tuan's more the realistic one. I'm more the optimist.
I think they still have a shot.
Right. You know, you're the pessimist, realist, whatever you want to call it, man. I'm the optimist, and I've always been that way. You know, I just feel like that's good vibes, and I think they need it tonight. But we're motivated and get this done as quickly as possible, but we also want to make sure that we're bringing good content to you. And by the way, we're only two episodes away from our 50th episode, Tuan.
Yes.
50. Can you believe 50. That, dude? We've almost been doing this for a year, man.
We almost caught up to our age.
Almost caught up to our age, bro. And you know what? We have a special guest lined up, all right? And I can go ahead and let everybody know that I have a friend of mine who is a former NFL wide receiver who played for the San Francisco 49ers as well as the New England Patriots and Jacksonville Jaguars. He came from UCLA, probably considered the best wide receiver to come out of UCLA, and that is none other than J.J. Stokes, all right? He's a friend of mine. I've known him for a long time, and he agreed to go ahead and come on our show in our 50th episode, which is going to come on May 28th. So stay tuned for that. Please feel free to be on here and ask him any questions. We're going to ask about his playing career. We're going to ask about, his basketball career, because that guy is a ball player from what I've heard from people who played basketball with him, right? So we'll get into that. My cousin Lewis is back. He said, hey, glad to see you guys back live. Right on, Lewis. Thanks for being here and for supporting us. So, before we get into it, Tuan, what's been going on, man? Anything new and exciting in the last week since we last spoke, man?
No, Mother's Day weekend was over this past weekend. And
yeah, that's a tough one, bro.
You and I both lost our mother over 2 years ago. And
yeah.
So it has a little bit of a different meaning nowadays than it did, you know, before. Took the wife and the family out. We got a nice brunch, kind of spent the whole day, you know, came home. We've been working on our yard for years, just trying to make it sort of an outdoor entertainment area. We're almost done. Going to have you over the house here when it's all said and done. But we kind of spent the day in the yard and, you know, had some mimosas and, you know, whatever, just mom type stuff, you know. So it was fun. You know, it was just relaxing type day. But, you know, at our age, everything you do wears you down. You know, I'm tired no matter what I do.
No, I hear you, man. As we get older, man, our energy wanes, man. So, but we're going to see you in a couple weeks. I know Lexi's turning 21, man.
Yeah, that's right. Yes, yes. My youngest will be turning 21. So,
that's a trip, man.
I'll absolutely have no more babies anymore. They'll always be my babies, but they won't be babies.
They'll always be your babies, man. But it'll be a trip to have a drink with your baby, bro.
Yeah.
Have a cocktail or two, right?
Exactly.
But anyways, for me, bro, is that, Amanda's back. Amanda's back in town. They get off early at Loyola Marymount. She had her last final, which was a paper that she had to turn in on over the weekend. Actually, it was on a Saturday night that she had to go ahead and do it. But we went down there to move her out. We hired like a shipping company. We boxed all these things up and they shipped it back to us or our house. But dude, it's amazing how much stuff that she accumulated over that period of time. And it's like five boxes plus two cars worth of stuff that we had to bring back. So we spent pretty much Mother's Day down in LA. And you know, what's funny is that, you know, the way LMU does it, I don't know how other colleges are like this, but they have an eating plan that they sign up for. And that eating plan is actually a contract for the year, right? So if you, whatever you don't use up in the first semester, can roll over to the second semester. But once the second semester's up and you haven't used it, you lose it, or you have to use it or you lose it, right?
Yeah.
So in that last weekend, bro, we were spending money big time. You know how I can eat, bro, right? I went to town. And then also we went to the convenience store that they have on campus. We bought a bunch of stuff that we really don't need, but we had to use up like $500 worth of stuff, right? And that's what we had to buy, $500 worth of food, $500 worth of stuff. So we accumulated all this stuff and brought it back with us, man. But it was kind of like a shopping spree at the last minute at a school. Anyway, we spent Mother's Day on campus and we just went ahead and just bought food at a cafeteria and just ate, you know, lunch together. And
what's going on? How come Amanda's not using all her food? Is she eating?
She's trying to go one meal a day now, man. She's
where'd she get that crazy idea from?
And that's my idea, bro. You know, but it's funny, you know, my wife is doing it now too, you know. And the thing is that, you know, my wife, you know, it's funny, my wife is, you know, you've seen her, she's hella thin, man, but she just she wants to be back the way she was, and she, you know, she feels like she's gaining weight and she's starting to just trying to eat one meal a day. You know, and that's, you know, I do it one meal a day, even though I eat like a horse, that one meal a day, I stay pretty strict to it, bro. I don't really deviate, right? And if I do, it's very little, right? And it keeps my weight off, man. And plus I have to work out too. I go to the gym and do cardio and do my circuit training I did in martial arts, and I still do that today. And that, it's a workout, right? It's only like 15, 20 minute worth of workout. And then I go to the sauna. But Amanda, my kid, is wanting to kind of get into like back to like, you know, she's not necessarily in shape, but she wants to get in better shape, right? So that's what she's trying to do, like, you know, eating differently, maybe watch her nutrition, maybe go work out a little bit more. So she's starting to, you know, look into that. So she's getting that idea from us because the one meal a day thing, she sees that, you know, it works. So she's been doing it. That's why she had this leftover meal plan.
Yeah, it's always a good idea to take care of your health and, you know, exercise if you can. Yeah,
for sure.
Good for her. I'm glad the family up on your good habits.
Exactly, man. Exactly, brother. So anyway, bro, so let's get into it, man. So we have like essentially, I don't know, 10, 15 slides worth of material that we're going to go ahead and cover. I think you can go ahead and show that, you know, we have this playoff bracket that we did, and that playoff bracket is looking ugly right now, bro, right? I mean, realistically, you know, the Celtics look like they're going to win tonight. They're winning right now, right? But right now you do see that our brackets, Tuan is at the top and I'm at the bottom. I have 13 points. Tuan has 5 points, but you can see the ones that are bolded in black are the ones that we correctly picked. And the ones that are highlighted in red font are the ones that are, they're incorrect, right? And you can see that the Cavs, you know, they were eliminated by the Pacers, which is a surprising development because we both picked the Cavs and they were the number one overall seed in the entire, you know, playoff.
Yeah, I picked the Cavs to win the whole thing.
You picked the Cavs to win it all. That's why, you know, you're not going to get any more points there. But I don't think either of us potentially are going to get points in the East, right? And in the West, the only way that you can gain on me is in this next round with the Thunder, right? If they beat if they go ahead and beat the Nuggets, which, you know, it's probably going to go seven. We can find out tomorrow, but it's easily going to go seven. You know, I had the Warriors, and we'll, you know, hopefully they can pull it out tonight. But if they pull it out tonight, Curry may come back, and then, you know, we'll see what happens. So I still have some potential points there potentially. But anyway, go ahead. What were you going to say, Tuan?
No, I was just saying, like, what the hell's going on in the East, bro? Like, damn. Like,
I know. It's just upside down, man. I mean, you know, we knew it, though, that the Pacers were a problem.
Yeah, the whole year I'm hooting and hollering about, You know, this is just the Cavs Celtics. It's inevitable. They're going to meet in the Eastern Conference Finals. I'm hooting and hollering that, you know, the Knicks are worn down to the nub, I guess. And
this will play hard.
Any more energy, and all of a sudden they're winning all these close games. You know, the Pacers out of nowhere look, you know, pretty much unbeatable.
They look strong, you know, man.
Yeah.
That team looks legit. So.
They do look legit and good for them. And, you know, it's exciting. I mean, it's probably not what the NBA wants. I mean, well, New York's always a winner for the NBA,
for sure.
But I'm sure they would have preferred a Cavs, New York Knicks, you know, Western or Eastern Conference final as opposed to the Indiana Pacers as a smaller market. But I'm, you know, if the Pacers, I'm kind of rooting for them. You know, I like the way they play.
I do too.
The players.
They're my
adopted team of the season, I think. If the Warriors go down, they're going to be my
adopted team. I am with you
team.
Too, man. They are my second favorite team in this tournament now. I'm pulling for them if the Warriors get ousted. So, but if the Warriors are still in it, you know, we got to root for our team.
Of course. Absolutely.
I think they have a fighting chance. We'll get there when we get there, but I want to go ahead and show the brackets so that everybody can kind of see the standings. And, you know, Tuan, I think that, you know, we can pretty much call this contest pretty much done right now, right? So that means next lunch is on you, bro. So, all right, well, let's go to the next slide, man. So we're going to go ahead and talk about the first series that we have here. So that's the Cavs and the Pacers. We see that the Pacers have taken out the Cavs in five games, four games to one. You can see in the bottom that we had our picks. You know, we had Cavs and six for both of us, which you saw in the previous slide with the brackets. But I wouldn't have highlighted those in red because they're wrong, right? But we have this kind of, you know, fantasy kind of element to, you know, what we've shown on the box scores here. These are not the actual box scores of, you know, the rebounds, points that you normally would see. These are a consolidated kind of measure of how efficient a player is when they're on the court on a per-minute basis and how many stats they accumulate, right? So you can see that, you know, the Cavs in – Game four and game five, they won both of those games. And I highlight the ones in light orange that kind of shows the most efficient player out of those teams. But you can see that, you know, in the first game, you know, Pascal Siakam was the guy in the starter group. And then, you know, TJ McConnell, you know, on the bench, who's actually been the most efficient. And then in the second game, this is what makes the Pacers dangerous. We talked about this last time, is that, you know, on any given night, any of those five can be the guys who just emerge as the guy to kind of watch out for, right? So in the second game, Miles Turner was the guy who had the most efficient output from a stats accumulation standpoint. And then you see Thomas Bryant, look at that, 1.56 in game two, and that was the closeout game, right? And you can see he didn't get that many points, but he accumulated a lot of points in those minutes. So you can see how efficient that was. But what's interesting, though, if you go back to the Cavs here, bro, you know, you look at that box score, bro. It's all about Donovan Mitchell. Look how many points that guy accumulated in the entire playoff run. 411.9 points. That's legit, right? And Tyrese Halliburton, if you look on the other end, he's 404.3 total fantasy points accumulated during the entire playoff run of all games played, right? So but you can see that the Cavs, as good as they were in the regular season, dude, they were very reliant on that one guy to be a superstar. And then, you know, Darius Garland getting hurt didn't help their
no,
chances.
No, that game where Garland, Allen, and it was
Evan Mobley and Darius and Hunter.
DeAndre Hunter. That game didn't help him. But you're right. I mean, something happened in the postseason where these guys were just they weren't as effective. I mean, they looked super dominant against Miami. You know, and maybe that kind of led them to false
thinking.
Get overconfident. You know, like, this is going to be easier. You know, false hope is going to be easier than we think it's going to be. And all of a sudden, they ran into a buzzsaw. And, you know, and one thing I was looking at your – and you mentioned it, but, you know, I do want to call out just my observation is, you know, the thing that I find most impressive is when I look at, like, Siakam's game, right, for Indiana. Not only was he one of the minutes leaders – but he was also the most efficient. So, like, you know, you could, like you pointed out Thomas Bryant, right? He played 10 minutes, which isn't a whole lot. And, you know, you can come in, get hot, and come out. So you can kind of – I think the more minutes, the less the skewed the number is, right? I think it can be a little more skewed when it's fewer minutes.
Correct.
So,
that
you
is
know,
correct.
You look at, you know, when you look at Donovan Mitchell, I mean, I don't know what more he could have done, to be honest with you. I mean, that second game, he's 37 minutes, you know, 1.63 points per minute, scored 63 total points. I mean, 60.3 total points. I mean, he did everything he could. You know, Evan Mobley, who was, you know, all year I've been kind of promoting him and touting him as, you know, kind of the up-and-coming player. He shrunk a little bit in the postseason. He felt it. I think Miles Turner kind of bodied him a little and you know, made him a little less effective than he could have been. But yeah, I'm shocked. I'm shocked that Cleveland, you know, ended the way they did. And to be honest with you, and we'll talk about it on the next slide, I don't know where Cleveland goes from here. They're kind of in one of those positions where, you know, maybe another year of experience. I mean, just running back and let's see what we get, you know.
I think that's all that's needed, bro, because this team is really dangerous and they're built to win now. You know, if anything, you know, they have a guy that they drafted last year in Jalen Tyson at a Cal. He looks like a good player, like a good all-around player. Get another year under his belt. He probably cracks the rotation. He's a good little young player. You know, guys like Ty Jerome, you know, he didn't really – wasn't that effective in this series. You know,
no, he wasn't.
Atkinson didn't really play him that much. And he was very effective in the previous series and actually throughout the entire regular season. So, you know, unfortunately, he kind of shrunk under pressure a little bit. I don't know if it was pressure. It might have just been the matchup, really. But you can see that DeAndre Hunter, you know – DeAndre Hunter and Evan Mobley were hurt, you know, and they missed game two. And Darius Garland had been hurt from the previous series. And that, I think, took a toll on them, right? Because they weren't as confident nor as effective, you know, when all those guys were at full strength. And I think that really kind of maybe showed that they were a little bit limited on their bench when we thought they were kind of deeper, right? So that's possible what may have happened. But this team is, you know, they're going to be a force for a few years to come. You know, we can probably go to the next slide because this is the slide that we alluded to, you know, for, you know, this is your segment, man. So,
So wanted to run through some numbers on Cleveland, and obviously they boat raced Miami. So a lot of these numbers are going to be skewed on that series. But when you look, you know, their offensive rating, they were number one in the playoffs up until they were eliminated, right? Averaging 122.6, number one. Defensive rating, they were doing well. They were ranked sixth at 110.7. Their overall net rating was second. You know, they were winning games by an average margin of 11.8 points per game, which is very good. I mean, and when you look at these numbers, you're like, there's no way they could lose. But, hey, it happened.
It happened.
Their starters, I mean, you know, their balance was I think, good. Their starter scoring, you know, the 82.1, which is very good, seventh in the league of the remaining 16 teams in the playoff. Their bench scoring was second with 37.3. I mean, all these numbers are looking good. You know, it took me a minute to look at kind of their strengths and weaknesses. Obviously, their strengths, defense, right? Evan Mobley won Defensive Player of the Year. Jared Allen is a known good shot blocker, good defender. They have a very, you know, they have a younger backcourt. I wouldn't say it's super young, but they got a backcourt that, you know, it was solid. Both Darius Garland and Donovan Mitchell have proven that there's no ill effects of what we thought about last offseason, which was, I don't know if these guys can play together. They clearly resolved that aspect. And they're young, you know, Mobley's young, DeAndre Hunter is young, you know, Ty Jerome is young, you know, Jared Allen's not old, not young, but, you know, they got some middle of the way guys. So they got a really good balance of kind of, I wouldn't say old, they don't have any older players, but they have a lot of kind of prime players and younger.
Correct.
You know, and regarding weaknesses, you know, we saw it last year. We saw it again this year. Last year, Donovan Mitchell was hurt for an extended period of time. This year,
And Jared Allen too last year. Jared Allen too was hurt last year.
Yeah, Jared Allen was hurt for most of the playoffs. This year it's Darius Garland. Evan Mobley missed the game. So they've got something there. You know, the injuries are a weakness, so I put that on there. You know, they're still gaining their playoff experience. They're still fairly young at that. You know, Mobley, Ty Jerome, even Jared Allen has not had a lot of playoff experiences, you know, so they need to get going. And then at times, and we saw this primarily with the Indiana game, their half-court offense is kind of off. You know, they're great at transition. They're great at you know, kind of running up and down and making the most of it. But in terms of their half-court offense, they struggle a little bit. So I kind of put that as a weakness as well. Then we get into the starting five. Obviously, you know, you see there, you know, Garland, Mitchell, Max Strus, Mobley, and Jared Allen. The rotation, the ones that they were using primarily is what I stuck with. You know, DeAndre Hunter was – I think, you know, he's a little bit of a shining star. I don't know if it's his use, you know, the system, but he's significantly better at Cleveland than he was in Atlanta. You know, he's playing a lot better. So, you know, I think that that's definitely an upside, someone that they could grow with. Sounds like you want to say something. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I think it's because he's surrounded more by better talent, honestly. That's the reason. So Atlanta's got good talent, but not like, you mean, no Donovan Mitchell. I mean, you know, Donovan Mitchell, I would say, is probably a better overall player than Trae Young, although Trae Young probably accumulates more stats. You know, you got Darius Garland versus, you know, maybe Dyson Daniels. I mean, Dyson Daniels, you know, he was the most improved player of the year. So that's a pretty good, you know, wash, I would say. Then you have the other guy, Jalen Johnson, you know, versus, you know, maybe an Evan Mobley, right? I would say Evan Mobley probably wins there. And then you got, you know, Onyeka Okongwu versus Jared Allen. I would say that for the most part, DeAndre Hunter is on a better team with the Cleveland Cavaliers, and that's probably why, you know, he's not forced to be like the third or fourth best player on that team. He's now like, you know, kind of coming off the bench and being, you know, an impact player coming off the bench. So that's probably why you're seeing that.
Yeah, agreed. And at least at this point in his career, that's where he's best suited coming off the bench. Maybe he'll be a starter down the road, but for right now. And then the overall assessment, obviously they're a team on the rise. I mean, you know, I've got all the reasons to believe that they should go further next year. I mean, I expect them to go to the finals this year, to be honest with you. I thought they caught a lot of their lumps last year. Evidently not. You know, I am a little concerned, you know, like whether or not they have enough to win everything, to win the whole thing. But in terms of, you know, successful, you know, I'd be shocked if they don't make the playoffs here next year. I'd be shocked if they're not in the top three teams record-wise next year. You know, so they're definitely on the rise.
I think that they're very super motivated for being ousted. You know, they were the number one overall seed. You can see, I don't know if you saw the post-game interview of Donovan Mitchell, but he was just cussing left to right. He's like, just, you know, effing call us out. Or, just effing just give up on us. You just watch. We'll be back. So he's motivated. He's the leader of the team. He's going to make sure everybody's back, you know, and coming in with the vengeance for next year. So I think this is going to motivate them to be even better next year. I don't think you're going to see any, like, you know, mental lapse or, you know, kind of a hangover, if you will, for losing, you know, this in this series. So I think they'll be back for the vengeance. I think that's a good breakdown, man. So, all right, let's go to the next series. So we got the
speaking of hangovers, Eddie.
You know, poor Jason Tatum, man. I mean, that guy just, you know, he ruptured his Achilles tendon in the last game, and that guy was balling, dude. Look at how many points he did in that game. Oh, 71.6. He was on fire in 39 minutes. That's good for 1.84. Is that what it is? I can't see it right.
Yeah, but it's 1.84. That's correct.
I mean, that's you know, close to two is really, really freaking good from a, you know, fantasy points per minute standpoint. But poor guy, you know, he blew, you know, anytime you see a non-contact injury, you know it's serious, man.
Yeah.
It always is, right?
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
When's the last time in basketball you saw a non-contact injury that wasn't an Achilles?
Oh. What's his name? Kyrie Irving. Kyrie Irving. It wasn't an Achilles.
Oh, he had the knee. It was his knee.
And that thing was hyperextended ugly, right? So, and that was non-contact. So, but it's typically – if it's non-contact, it's going to be more than likely an Achilles, or, you know, it could be a knee, you know, for the most part, or it could be a calf. But it's one of those three that's usually the case. And I had the same injury that Jason Tatum had, and I got to tell you, man, the recovery from an Achilles injury is a bear. And a buddy of mine, Bakir, you know, that, you know, you met him before. He was a DJ at my 50th party, son of Lucius Allen. He just blew out his Achilles 7-8 weeks ago. And, you know, he came over to play poker that night that, you know, we were talking about you coming over. And he won it all, you know, for that night. But he was walking around actually pretty decently for having just, you know, had an Achilles tear like 7-8 weeks ago. And he was doing it playing basketball too, non-contact, you know.
That explosion you do in basketball, those sudden movements, you know, they're a bear on things like the Achilles, hamstrings, those type of things.
Oh, but it's a bear, man. And the recovery for it is a bear. It takes – at least a year for you to come back from that injury. And it took me, you know, I wasn't like a professional athlete, nor did I have, you know, the best, you know, treatment available to me. I had good treatment, but these guys have world-class treatment, helping them out, right, to get them back into playing again soon. But, you know, our hearts go out to Jason Tatum. He's a hell of a good player, man, a good guy, dude, you know, father, you know, just he's a good, you know, ambassador of the NBA. He's just a good kid, man. And you know, but I think he'll come back with a vengeance.
But I will tell you this, Eddie. In my mind, even without Tatum, I still think the Celtics should win this series.
You think that they're going to – do you think they could come back and win
this? No, I don't think they're going to win. I'm saying let's just say he heard it in the first minute of game one.
Yeah.
Right? I would still expect the Celtics to be a better team than the Knicks.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, but the other problem here is that Porzingis, he's got some kind of illness that, you know, he's been fighting throughout, you know, his you know, this entire season. And, you know, that kind of leads me to believe, and I don't want to kind of speculate, But I've had an illness that kind of had for years, man. That's Lyme disease, right? Mm. You know, and Lyme disease can affect multiple people in different ways. I'm wondering if that's what it is that he has, man. But, you know, we don't know. I mean, because Lyme disease can create problems from an energy standpoint. It could create problems from a, you know, a mental capacity standpoint. You know, you don't have all your, you know, your capacity with you. There's a lot of different ways that disease can affect you. And who knows? I'm going to speculate, but I don't know for a fact that that's what's going on with him, but he's dealing with something too. So you're dealing with two guys, and Tatum is no longer on the team. He's out for the season and rest of the series and, you know, likely to come back sometime middle of next year. Then you got Porzingis, who had been a difference maker for this team, you know, in the entire season when he came back, right? And then when he came back, he started kind of dealing with this illness, and it's still lingering a little bit, right? So he's not 100%. So now you have, you know, all the weight is on Jaylen Brown and Derek White, right? And Drew Holiday, right? And old man Al Horford and Peyton Pritchard. You know, all these guys are good, but they're not like – they're kind of being put into a position to be more than they actually were planning to be for this team during the series. And we'll see, man. But they have the talent to get there. I just don't. Yeah. I didn't see the Knicks doing what they're doing, especially with as thin of a bench as they have, man. You know, one of my cousins was kind of making a bet to a few of us. One of my cousins' kids, and he was saying that the Knicks were going to take out the Celtics because the Celtics were overrated. And I'm like, that's a bold statement, man. And sure enough, he's being proven right. Of course, you know, Jason Tatum going out, but you know, they already won that game anyway, or lost that game, but, you know, he has something to say there, and it's interesting because I said, hey, look, man, the Knicks are kind of thin bench, man, and I think that's going to bite him in the end, and I'm surprised that it hasn't really bitten him yet, man. You know, I'm surprised, honestly. I'm surprised at how well the Knicks are playing.
Well, Eddie, an interesting turn of events, right? So the Celtics are up, what, 23 points, I think, right now on New York. Yep. You know, this could prove risky for New York, and I'll explain why, because with Tatum – the Knicks were kind of the underdog, and they were fighting kind of, you know. Now that's sort of turned around, right? So now the Celtics are the team that have got to get together, win this, you know. It wouldn't surprise me if this series went to Game 7.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they've got the Celtics, they're still a good team without Tatum, and they're super motivated to prove that they're the defending champs, and I picked them to win it all, right? I think it's going to be a lot harder for them to win it all now without Tatum. But, you know, other guys have to step up, and they have the capacity to do it, especially if Jaylen Brown is that junkyard dog like he was last year, right?
Yep.
And he's going to have to be that junkyard again this year, man. But,
yep.
But okay, so what do you see, man? Do you see this thing going to 7?
No, I mean, realistically, I think New York should end it next game. They're at home. They're in New York, although Boston's won one of their games out there. I believe their one victory they won was in New York. So we'll see. If I was a betting man, I'd say it's going to end by game 6, but, you know, it's going to be close. You know, like you were talking about the minutes. I'm just looking at the minutes for the players in New York, and, you know, it's almost comical, right? It's just all the starters are in the high 30s.
Yeah.
Oh, some into the 40s. There's a bunch of zeros, you know, for certain players. And then you look at Boston, you know, 34 minutes for Pritchard, 34 minutes for Horford in game 3 and game 4, 37 minutes for Horford's like 179 years old, bro.
I know.
37 minutes. Pritchard's playing 20 minutes, you know. I'm genuinely, I don't know what to say because I'm shocked that the Knicks can continue to pull out this much energy, you know.
I mean, you got to give it. Tom Thibodeau must be managing the timeouts in a way that he can give his team rest because or they're in the best shape. They're all Steph Curry's, right? Because Steph Curry's probably the best conditioned player in the entire NBA. And, you know, but he hasn't played this many minutes. And yet, you know, this team is playing a lot of minutes every freaking game, right? Josh Hart, OG Anunoby, and Mikal Bridges have the 1, 2, 3 most minutes in the entire NBA for the entire season.
Yep.
So, and these guys are still playing hard, man. So these guys must be in really good shape, man. So
yeah, and then one thing that I would add is, you know, I thought the Minnesota Timberwolves New York Knicks trade, you know, I thought that Minnesota got the better end of the deal. You know,
with Julius Randle and
I thought they were getting because you know I like Dante DiVincenzo and all that, but this trade really has seemed to work out for both teams.
It did
really well.
I agree.
Well.
Carl Anthony Towns is a good player, man, and He's definitely showing up for this team, you know, throughout the entire season. But real quick, before we move on to the next series, one thing I want to point out, we pointed out in the last slides that it was Donovan Mitchell and Tyrese Halliburton's point totals. Look at Jalen Brunson's. You know, look at that. It's at 463.2, and then you have Tatum at 442.9. This is how many fantasy points or stats accumulation that they've had the entire, you know, playoff, all the series combined, right? So I'm keeping track of that. So there's a fantasy element to this, too. And, again, you can see the fantasy points per minute, you know, for each game. In games one and two, both the same two guys for the Knicks, it's Karl-Anthony Towns and Jalen Brunson were essentially the same for both times, right? Interesting enough, that's how it worked out. And Jason Tatum has been the guy for, you know, the starters on the Celtics side, consistently been the most efficient guy from a fantasy points per minute standpoint. But anyway, I just wanted to point that out since that's
– Yeah, no, thanks for pointing that out. Yeah, so up until what we've seen right now, Jalen Brunson is the points leader. I have a feeling that may change here in a slide or two, but – you're right. And Jalen Brunson, the thing about him is he's been doing it like in critical times.
Yeah, he's,
right?
He's the clutch player of the year.
Yeah.
Clutch player of the year.
Yeah.
So
that's kind of a funny award to me because I don't really know how to measure it. It just kind of seems like a.
Yeah, I don't know. But, it's a subjective thing, right?
It is. But definitely in this series, he's living up to that title. I will
I agree,
that.
Man.
Yeah.
I agree. All right, let's go on to the next series, bro.
All right, here we are.
We got the Nuggets and the Thunder, and I think this is the series of all series right now. This one easily
smells. I just looked at a certain someone's point total, and that's ridiculous. But go ahead.
Oh, yeah. Did you see? Look at Nikola Jokic. 712.7 fantasy points, dude. It's ridiculous.
And but that's not the MVP, Eddie. That's not the MVP.
No, I changed Gilgeous Alexander because, you know, voter, you know, fatigue, you know, for Nikola Jokic. But, you know. Granted, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is, you know, 452.8 points.
He's up there, but
it's still good. It's still good.
Come on, man.
He hasn't played as many games.
Let me ask you this. What team is worse, the Warriors without Steph or Denver without Jokic?
Oh, it's a no-brainer, man. Dude, Nikola Jokic is, you know, we'll get into it later. When we get to our player greatness index, you know, I don't have Nikola Jokic – I have Nikola Jokic in our segment next time to show you how his index compares to some of the all-time greats. He is already right there with some of the all-time greats. If you look at how well this guy has played as far as accumulating stats, accolades, you know, easily could be a four-time MVP, but I don't think he's going to get it this year, but he could easily be it, right? But, you know, we'll get into that when we get there. But how much of a disparity there is between him and the second place guy when we get to the next final list, you know, all the top 15, right? But yeah, it's ridiculous, man. But the Nuggets, their complexion smells very much like the Knicks. They're very starter, you know, they're very starter contingent, or they're very dependent on their starters to perform in order for them to be, you know, at the level that they're at, right? Because you could see, you know, look at the distribution of minutes on their bench, bro. Look at Russell Westbrook is the guy. That's it. It's almost a 6.5 man rotation. Then, you know, I think they figured out that this guy Peyton Watson is a damn good player. He's got to play more, right? So in the second game, he got 15 minutes versus his 8, and they have to distribute more minutes because the starters. I mean, I think Jamal Murray, I think, leads. You know, as far as all players that I'm going to show in the last slide, he has most minutes out of everybody, man. All right? And they're just strongly dependent on their starters. Whereas look at the Thunder. They're throwing out like a five-man rotation at the 10-man rotation with five players coming off the bench. So, you know, they are more built to kind of last longer if they can get past this round. Because, you know, and I think they're going to take them out next game. I think they're just – overall, better rest the team, younger.
Oh, yeah, no, they're definitely the better team. I was making an observation, you know. Jamal Murray has one more point than Jalen Brunson, but his efficiency is just
way less.
So much worse.
Yes.
So much worse.
It takes him so many more minutes to get those points.
Which is just notable. I think that's a notable thing to take a look at.
Yeah, so you want to see, like, okay, Rashai Gilgeous-Alexander is the most efficient guy on the Thunder from the starting standpoint. That you can see that the yellow, you know, bars or highlight for fantasy points per minute, right? Then you look at Aaron Wiggins in game one, and then you look at Cason Wallace in game two as the most efficient guy coming off the bench. And that's where, you know, you can see consistently it's been the same guys for the Nuggets. The Nuggets, it's Nikola Jokic, games one, game two, and Westbrook, game one, game two off the bench, right? Yeah. They are very dependent on that starters, and that's what I think. I think that's going to be their – that's how they're going to I think they're not going to advance far because of that. That's my opinion. And that's why I think the Knicks, once they get to the next one, I think they're going to get taken out by the Pacers. We're going to see probably a Pacers Thunder finals, honestly. That's right. Yeah.
That'll be action packed. And then I'm looking at game 4 for Russell Westbrook. You know, he's the leader, but look at that. That's, you know, half a point, while Wiggins is, you know, well over a point, and because there's no one else that plays.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. Yeah. 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 So, all right, man. So we'll find out tomorrow whether the Thunder go ahead and take them out, or if it goes to game 7 with the Nuggets playing, taking out the Thunder tomorrow. So let's go to the last series. And that's right. That's going to go on. The game started just about 5. Actually, it's about to start now. We're going into game 5 here with the Wolves and the Warriors. And, you know, when this series started, when the Warriors took out the Wolves in game 1, this is when we had our last podcast. And I'm like, oh, man, this is a great sign, right? And then, you know, 12 minutes later, Curry tweaks his hamstring. And then, you know, I thought, oh, man, okay, they just did this without Curry, and they just won game 1. That's a good sign. And then all of a sudden, you know, everything changed from there, right?
Well, the pessimist in me, Eddie, saw game 1 as they were beating the crud off of Minnesota. And that game, they were holding on for dear life at the end. I felt like, even though they ended up winning by, I want to say, 10 points, I just felt like they were holding on for dear life. So the Warriors in game 1, I saw it as though, oh, here it comes. Like, don't lose this game. You cannot lose this game. Because once I saw the hamstring, I knew it's going to be multiple games till Curry gets back. And I'm like, you can't. You know, you can't lose this game. And I was looking at it like, had that game been one quarter longer, they would have lost. The Warriors would have lost.
Awesome. Yeah, potentially, but I got to give it to him, man. You know, we talked about this in the last episode that, you know, the series that the Warriors had played against the Rockets, I think, kind of prepped them to come in with that force and intensity from the outset. And I think that the Wolves weren't prepared for it. They've adjusted to it now. But the Warriors, I think, need to get back to that because, you know, they seem to have lost their confidence offensively. And rightfully so, because you got, you know, arguably probably one of the most impactful players in NBA history in the amount of impact that one player has on the entire defense, right? He's no longer there, can't spread the floor that much. So everybody essentially kind of plays zone against the Warriors because they know that these guys really can't shoot outside of Steph, right? You know, consistently. So you're seeing that the Warriors kind of recognize, I got to know how to shoot. So they're tightening up a little bit. Jimmy Butler's kind of starting to play a little bit more passive. And I'm wondering what's going on, man, because, you know, everybody's waiting for this playoff Jimmy. We saw him in game 2, I think it was playoff Jimmy that we saw. They still lost. But, you know, he's been kind of passive. And, you know, we talked about it a little before the podcast started. You know, I think, you know, me and my friends are talking about this a little bit. I think the reason why, you know, Jimmy Butler is doing this is I think he recognizes that he can't do this alone. He needs help. So he's trying to get his other teammates going so that when, you know, these guys get going, he can, you know, instill some of the force that he's known to, you know, provide when he needs to, right? So I think that's kind of what's going on. You know, what's happened now is Kuminga's come out, right? He's, you know, he's now become a revelation, although we knew that he was a really good player, you know, earlier in the season, you know, and before his injury, he's starting to get his confidence. He started to become this impact player that we all were hoping as Warrior fans that he would become as the 7th pick, right? But, you know, when he came back, he came back to a different team. Jimmy Butler was now on the team, and he kind of didn't have a role as he did before. He wasn't that offensive scoring machine that he was being asked to be when the team was different, right? So he had to kind of figure out what he needed to do. And I think, you know, Kerr, he wants some of those little things to come out of Kuminga. He wants him to rebound more. He wants him to pass. He wants them to play a better team defense. All these things that don't really come naturally for him because, you know, Kuminga – hasn't been playing basketball since he was a kid. It was something that he just started learning later in life. He's just a super athlete, right? And I think these little things is what Kerr wants him to do. That's probably why you see him not being in the rotation as much as, you know, he was in previous times. So,
bear with me here because I had a little bit of a revelation. So earlier today, I read an article, and the article was about the the second to last game of the season when the Warriors were playing Portland.
Yep.
And Kuminga was in the game, and there was a play where he looked off Curry and initiated his own offense. And something about that pissed Kerr off. I don't want to pin this just on Kerr. The coaching staff off. And if you remember, the next game he didn't play, and he didn't really play anymore after that. And here in that context lies the rub. Kuminga is significantly different than every other player on that team, where Kuminga, rightfully or wrongfully so, has the ego to believe that he doesn't need anyone else to do what he's got to do. Okay. I think that Kerr has spent, and again, this is not a right or wrong. I'm not saying one person.
Yeah, this is an opinion.
But this is what I'm envisioning, or this is what I'm seeing. You know, Kerr spends the whole season coaching these players to rotate and live off of Curry. Curry is the centerpiece.
Yes.
And so Curry then attracts so much attention that he makes the game easier for everyone else because they have double teams. They have all these opportunities. So we as fans are led to believe a false positive that these players are better than they really are. Okay. And so Kuminga is the one guy that's like, no, I can do it. Like, no, give me the ball. No, I'll attack. No, give it to me. And Kerr's like, no, this isn't about you, Kuminga. This is about team play, which is code word for we do what Curry needs us to do, right? That's, in theory, what the offense is. And so what's happened now is that Curry got hurt, and the whole team's got their thumb up their butt because they don't know what to do. They haven't been working at it. They haven't been developing it. They haven't been of that mindset. They've just been – and so now Kuminga's like, okay, give me a couple games to warm up because I know I can do this by myself anyway.
Yeah, they're learning on the fly right now, bro, on how to operate.
They are.
Curry. Right, but that's kind of what you're seeing as a result is that you know they're still trying to find themselves right now without you know the guy who actually was the centerpiece of their offense, and now they have to figure out something on the fly. This is why you're seeing Kerr throw a bunch of players out there. You can see like the rotation, you know, you can see how many guys are playing now. You have like 13 guys playing right now for the Warriors, right? So he's trying to find a combination that works because he hasn't been put in this position, especially when it's this. You know, the stakes are this high, right?
No, so I agree with you, Eddie, but this is what we're finding out. We're finding out, you know, Moses Moody can't initiate his own offense. Buddy Hield for sure can't initiate his own offense.
No.
Pajemski for sure can't initiate his own offense. Draymond Green can't initiate his own offense.
Kuminga can, though.
Huh?
Kuminga can.
And so can
Butler. But they can't shoot.
But Butler can to a degree.
Yes.
I guess I'm not clear if Butler can or can't. I just know that his game mindset is that he can't do it alone, and so he distributes the ball. So I can't sit here and tell you he can do it over and over again. I don't know. But I do know that he's most likely the most capable. But everyone else, Eddie, is just – they're waiting for Curry to open up the court for them, and Curry ain't there.
Yeah, no, it's a good observation, bro, and I think it's a shrewd observation, man.
Yeah, so the thing is, what do you do, right? And if I'm Kerr, I don't blame him for doing it this way. You've got one of the greatest players in NBA history. Of course you're going to build. But, like, for example, when Tatum goes out, this is kind of what my comment was about Tatum. You know, Jaylen Brown can still initiate. Derek White can initiate. Jrue Holiday can initiate. Porzingis. So you got a bunch of players that can play without Tatum. They don't need Tatum to be who they are. Does Tatum make their job easier? Yes. Is Tatum a better player? Yes. But they're fundamentally effective. When you take Curry out of this, dude, everyone's gone to mush.
No, it's true. It's true. It's just because the whole offense is built around that one player.
Correct.
Online, right?
It's not even motion offense. It's Curry offense.
It is the Curry offense, man, because he creates matchups for other players to make their jobs and lives easier from an offensive standpoint. Now, from a defensive standpoint, we could say that Draymond Green is the Curry of the defensive end, and he makes everybody else's job easier from the defensive end, right? Because if you're doing it right, he's going to do the right thing, and he's probably considered the best self-defender we've ever seen. I would agree with that. And, you know, the team without him is going to be a problem defensively. They're not as good. Just like with Curry, they're not as good offensively. So
yeah, they're getting double punished. Number one, they're losing their star, which is already would hurt most teams. But number two, the whole dynamic of how you're guarded is completely different now.
No, I agree, man. But they, you know, let's take it to the other side, right? The Wolves, right? Now Anthony Edwards, bro, he's a force, right? Now his first two games, you know, you could see that he was kind of still dealing with his ankle injuries that he had. You know, I think he had sustained it in the previous series against the Lakers. And, you know, he wasn't really himself. But dude, that last game, in game number four, oh my, dude, he really asserted himself. And that combination of him and Julius Randle has now become a problem. They are a force. I wouldn't be surprised, you know, if they advance, which was likely to them to advance. But as a Warrior fan, I can't really crown that yet, nor do I want to accept that yet just yet. Yeah. But let's just say they do. And let's just say that, you know, the Thunder get by. That's going to be a hell of a series, bro. The Thunder and the Wolves, because the Wolves are playing at a very high level right now. And, you know, they're deep. They have, you know, the Naz Reid guy, man, he is a problem offensively, dude, because he can shoot, right? And they can throw a small lineup with you with that guy. They can throw a big lineup with Rudy Gobert. They're a very versatile team. Jaden McDaniels, you know, very good defensive player, you know, and then Dante DiVincenzo, which is surprisingly enough, he hasn't really played as well as
he's been playing like crap. He's been playing like crap.
Yeah, I agree with you, man.
If he wakes up, good Lord.
Yes. Oh, right on. Thanks, Lewis. Excellent points. Right on, cuz. All right, man. So, but these guys, the Wolves, they're poised to win the series. I think that the Warriors are going to find a way to pull this game out. I know you don't feel as confident as I do. I'm the optimist. You're the realist or pessimist, whatever you want to call it.
You can call me pessimist. That's all right.
But you know, this team right here is a problem. You can see, like, look at the points total of Anthony Edwards, 442.1 points that he's accumulated in all the games he's played.
Yep.
The highest guy on the Warriors is 81.8 points
for
Jimmy Butler, right? Yeah. So you can see that this guy's a force, man. But we shall see what happens here. We both picked the Warriors to win this. You picked them in seven. I picked them in six. We're both likely going to be wrong, but
although, in all fairness, I picked them against the Lakers, right? So
I agree.
Yeah, not against the Wolves. You had the Wolves, I had the Lakers, and no, Anthony Edwards. You know, I'm going to tell you something right now, Eddie. That last game, you know, the half ended. I think the Warriors were up 2 points at the half, 56-54, something like that.
Yeah, and that last three pointer that he did.
Yes,
right before the half ended.
When Anthony Edwards made that 3-pointer, I'm like, we're screwed.
You knew it.
We're screwed, dude.
It just
he had that them. Look, and I was like, dude, I felt all the times Curry screwed someone else. You know, I'm like, we just got Curry. We just got Curry by someone who isn't Steph. You know, and I'm like, son of a bee, you know, like,
I know, man. Well, we'll see, man. We're already at 48 minutes. We're going to probably get here done in about 30 minutes, but let's get to the last segment, man. The last slide for this. So this is just a comparison of the overall top 15 fantasy points accumulated for all of these series combined. And then in the next table on the right is the efficiency. It's sorted by efficiency. So fantasy points per minute, whoever is the most efficient is going to be at the top. And you can see that the guy who is likely not going to be picked as the MVP this year is at the top for both of these categories, right? Nikola Jokic, you can see he's almost double, dude. The next guy. And the next guy, I mean, not almost, but, you know, you can see he's kind of close to double, right? He's not there yet. But Jamal Murray and Nikola Jokic are the two highest scoring guys in the entire playoff, right?
Correct.
You can see then Brunson, you know, being number three. You know, but you can see, you know, Donovan Mitchell has now been eliminated. He's in red. That's why he's in red, because he's out. But, you know, 411.9 points. But you can see Alperen Şengün, bro, he's still on there, man, and he's been eliminated since last round, right? And he's the 14th highest guy. You can see that guy had a hell of a series when he played against the Warriors, right? But if you look at, you know, when you sort it to the other side, you can see, like, how efficient these guys are. Now, Jason Tatum, you know, he's now out now, right? I didn't highlight him in red because his team is still in. But you can see that the top four guys, they're very efficient. They're, you know, anytime you see 1.5, you know, that's really good efficiency. Two is, like, ridiculous, right? But you can see, like, the lowest guy being Aaron Gordon, he's playing a lot of minutes, 453 minutes, and he's getting 372 points. That's good for 0.8 points per minute, right? That's not the most efficient thing. Jamal Murray, so you can see, is, like, the most minutes played out of everybody. and he's, you know, and his efficiency isn't necessarily the greatest either, man. But yeah. I just want to kind of put this out there for you guys to kind of see as you're putting your fantasy lineups together, you can kind of gauge, you know, which players have done well collectively and kind of use these as you go ahead and set your lineup. So,
yeah.
All right, man. So we're moving on to the next segment. Now, this
all right, here we go.
This is something that Twan and I created about a week and a half ago. And we, you know, over a conversation we had over lunch, you know, Twan was like, man, you know, I always kind of wonder why, you know, who really is the true greatest, man? Because it's so subjective. It's always kind of on just titles alone, right? And I'm like,
but it's also people using the stats they want for the player they represent.
Correct.
Right? Yeah.
Correct.
Like if you're a Jordan over LeBron, well, Jordan's got six and six MVPs and never lost. You know,
right.
if you're a LeBron guy, you're like, well, he's got the most points in NBA history. And he's got, so like all these things are true, but one doesn't weigh it. Like you got to weigh these out. And so when you have these conversations, you got to compare, you know? And so that's really where it stemmed from. I just got sick and tired of people using what they felt was their argument and ignoring all the other stats. You know,
exactly.
Don't ignore it all. Put it all in one big pot. And let's see what we come up with.
So this is what we did, right? What we did is we came up with all these categories, which I showed last week, right? So all of these things that you see here are the same, you know, the same categories that you saw last week, with the exception that the ones highlighted in yellow are where I made some of these changes. Okay. Now, some of the rationale. Now, when I initially picked the NBA All Team, I kind of wanted initially what I had was I had 1 point for third, you know, 2 points for second, and then four points for first. And my rationale was like, I wanted each to be double of the other, right? There was no real basis for it, right?
Yeah.
But what I went ahead and did is like, you know what? If there are 450 players in the NBA, right, on average, right? It's about that, right? It's about, you know, 15, you know, per team, you know, two-way players and all that. 450, and each of these teams of the first, second, and third team All-NBA, there's five players each. So that's 15 slots, right? So I said, okay, if there's 450 players and there's 15 slots, that means the entire 30 points is the result. So let's go ahead and make 30 points the amount of points that's possible for this category, right? So what I went ahead and did is said, okay, let's go ahead and make, if it's 30 points total, let's go ahead and put 5 points for third, 10 points for second, and then 15 points for first. So that's all of that equals up to 30 points. So that's the rationale. Yep. So it's no longer 1, 2, 4 like I had previously. It's now 5, 10, and 15.
Which the same mindset applies to the defensive. All
correct. The exact same thing for the defensive, because you're picking the same 15 players at 450. You get the same kind of result. Now, for all-star selections, this was a little different. Now, the way I went about doing this is, you know, if I had to kind of – it's math that I forgot how I went about doing it. But initially I had it as 3 points per. And the reason why I had it at 3 points is because the original system that I had was 1 for third, 2 for second, and 4 for first for the all teams. I said, okay, let me just pick something in between. That's 3, right?
Yep.
But I came up with a mechanism that I came up with the 8 all-stars. And I know I sent you a text about it. I just don't remember exactly why. But I'll go – when we get through it, I'll come up with it as it comes back to me as I'm going through it. But everything else is pretty much the same, right?
Yep.
So what we've done here is I've crunched all these numbers. I did the top 75 players that the NBA, you know, recognized as the top 75. I'm not going to reveal that in this episode. We're going to do that next episode. But I went ahead and came up with the player greatness index for the top 75 players of all time.
Yep.
And I'm going to compare that next week to the subjective top 75 players of all time that ESPN provided when they initially announced this team. So our player greatness index, we're going to rank these two based on what the numbers say versus the subjective, and we're going to compare and contrast, right?
Yeah.
But anyway, let's go to the what we have here is
– Eddie, I'm thinking on the top 75, we should probably do it like, you know, 10,
backwards.
10, 10, and then like 15 on the final.
Yeah.
Anyway, we'll talk about it.
We'll talk about that when we get there, man.
Okay.
But anyway, so what I wanted to show here is that – let me go ahead and take this off. So this was an episode 40, which was it was like March 12th or 15th when we had this episode. But you can go look back, you know, on that episode 40 of Buzzer Beaters. We went ahead and revealed our Mount Rushmore for each of these positions: point guard, shooting guard, small forward, power forward, and center. And this is the list that of players that Twan and I agreed should be on this list. This is a subjective list. We went ahead and argued points. We said, okay, these are the four guys that should be recognized as the best, right? Magic being – and by the way, we didn't necessarily put these in the order, right? These are just names that in our minds we had as the greatest of all time.
Correct.
And not listed in any particular order. Now, when we went ahead and did this with the PGI index, you can go to the next slide, bro. This is in order, okay? Now, I'm going to go ahead and flash right here the PGI index for each of these players. Now, these are all collective from the previous slide and this slide. Again, I will take this off. This is currently Magic Johnson, Oscar Robertson, James Harden, Stephen Curry. Now, that surprises you when you see James Harden up there, right? That surprises me, all right?
Yep.
And actually, he was slightly ahead of Stephen Curry, believe it or not, right? So what I want to go ahead and show you here is the numbers. When you in the previous slide, when I showed all those categories and I punched in all the numbers, this is what the numbers came out to be. So Magic Johnson, that's 3,886.3. You can see him relative to John Stockton that he's significantly better from a greatness standpoint, a greatness index standpoint. You can compare Magic to Stephen Curry at 35.58. You know, he's Stephen Curry's closer than John Stockton, but Magic is still kind of the gold standard, right? Oscar Robertson is the closest one to Magic Johnson, right? But then look at James Harden, 35.59.4. He's 1.4 points better than Steph Curry, which is surprising. And the reason being, bro, is because he has more points, he has more assists, and he has more steals. That's the reason, okay?
Yeah, now, and but so the interesting part here is Steph has four championships.
I know.
Which Harden doesn't have. He has a finals MVP, which Harden doesn't have.
Correct.
My guess would be that Harden is probably made All-NBA first team more times than Curry.
I don't have that.
Yeah, I don't expect you to have it. I'm just kind of thinking through my
mind. I might as well have it here, you know, because I do have the spreadsheet here, and I can go ahead and show you. But at least talk to it as we're talking about. I should probably have it open anyway. But let me just go ahead and get to the player index that I have here. So PGI. Okay, so we have. James Harden was, let's see, I'll go ahead and tell you right now. So I'm just almost there, man. I just want to go ahead and type it up here.
Yeah, so James Harden. So James Harden had
NBA all teams. So he had eight all-star selections. Okay. That's one. Okay. Excuse me. Yeah, he had 10. He had 10 all-star selections. That's one. He made, let me see. That's 90 points he had for NBA first team because they're 15 points each. So that is what, six? So he made six first teams. So then you can compare that to Curry. And Curry is, you know, I'm almost there, man, because there's a lot of numbers I'm scrolling here. So Curry has eight All-Star selections. He also has less first team awards. Harden has more.
Yep.
But the points, Harden has over 2,000 more points than Curry does. He also has significantly more assists than Curry, and he also has significantly more steals than Curry.
And that's all regular season, because I got to imagine Curry has him beat on all postseason stats.
But I also include postseason stats.
Yeah.
I include all this stuff.
No, I'm just saying this is a little bit of a shocker.
It is a shocker.
Then the argument here would be, you know, and we can look through the numbers a little more deeply later, but the argument here is that Harden has significantly better stats than Curry.
Significantly.
Regular season stats.
Regular and combined regular and maybe post.
I got to imagine Steph got more postseason stats.
If you add all those together, Harden's still more. That's the reason why he's a little bit better. That's the only reason, bro. That is the only reason. Because here's the thing. In order to come up with this PGI index, I had to normalize it, right? I normalized it by the amount of years that they played in regular season as well as the postseason. The awards, you know, all these, you know, championships, you know, those are not normalized. They're just numbers. Whatever they get, they're numbers, right? They're not normalized, whereas their stats are. But even when you do that, Harden is still slightly better, which is very interesting. That was very interesting. And I know we're going to get a lot of like, what are you talking about? But, hey, man, there's no bias on this, man. This is what the numbers say, okay? This is it. This is why we're doing this, to objectively show by numbers through the system that we created who the true measure of greatness, right? And could just imagine if James Harden had won some championships, where he might be. Yeah, and he's considered the top shooting guard of all time. He is on that list.
I agree. And for the last 2 to 5 years, the argument has been, who's the greatest point guard, Magic or Seth? Well, the argument really is closer to, is it Oscar, Big O, or Magic?
Correct.
That's really, at this point, what the argument
is. That is correct. That is correct, bro. Yeah. That is correct. So let's go on to the next category, bro. So we got shooting guards. Okay, woo-hoo. This was our subjective list from episode 40. We argued the points. We all said Michael Jordan for sure was number one. We argued that Kobe Bryant is for sure number two. Then you made the point for Dwayne Wade, right? And you're like, no, Dwayne Wade should be. And I'm like, okay, yeah, you have a point. And then we both agreed Ray Allen. It was between Ray Allen and Reggie Miller, if I remember correctly, right?
Yeah.
Right. So when we go to the PGI index, here we go. Michael Jordan, 5,491.3. Okay, you saw Magic's was at 3,800, right? You can see how significantly higher Michael Jordan is. It's not even close. Look at Kobe Bryant, 3,732. He's not as high as Magic. Magic was 38, right? You got Dwayne Wade. Yep. Look how significantly lower Dwayne Wade is at 2,877.8. Ray Allen is not even close. But look at John Havlicek, bro. 3,895.9, okay? Yep. And George Gervin being higher than Dwayne Wade. Right? So that tells you, when you go to the PGI index, this is actually the order it should be, which is what I just showed. I showed Michael Jordan should be number one, John Havlicek number two, Kobe Bryant number three, George Gervin number four.
Yeah.
So we were right on two of them, right? Which is interesting.
Yes.
Right?
We were right on two. I didn't even – you brought up the Iceman in passing. We talked about him.
Yes.
But this is why I love the system, because now I'm curious to hear from people out there, because what's your argument? You know, what are we not measuring, or what are we weighting incorrectly? You know, like, tell us.
Right.
You know, because to me, this is a beautiful stat, because you have people from from the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, and the 90s, 2000s. There's kind of one in each kind of era. You're kind of this is like evenly distributed across a lifetime of NBA hoops.
That's correct. You know?
And so this is fantastic. I mean, this is freaking great.
This is what, so not taking bias aside, the numbers say that this is the Mount Rushmore of shooting guards.
Correct.
In this order, in this order, by the way.
Correct. And for those of you that are paying attention, and Eddie brought it up, for those of you who are talking, who's the greatest Laker? Now, we haven't showed you all the Laker stats, but at least in our system, you already got a sneak preview that Magic is a greater Laker than Kobe was.
Correct.
You know? And there's going to be a whole bunch of people that are going to go, what? You're insane. But that's what the system says.
That's why we're doing it, bro.
Yeah.
All right, let's go to the next one.
Great stuff, man. Great stuff.
Okay, here is our subjective slide that we revealed in episode 40 when we argued the points of who we thought should be in the Mount Rushmore for small
forwards. Correct.
We both selected Kevin Durant on our lists. We both selected LeBron James on our list. We both selected Larry Bird. You picked Julius Erving. I didn't, okay?
Yes.
I forgot who I said should be up there, but I didn't have Julius Erving. Anyway, when you go to the PGI index, go to the next slide. This is the actual order. It was LeBron James.
So we had all the right guys.
We had all the right guys, but in the wrong order. But we didn't initially put it in the right order in the previous slide. The previous slide was our subjective order in our minds as to who we thought in order it should be, right?
Yeah.
This is what the PGI index numbers show. And to give you some numbers behind it, Kevin Durant, 3,558. LeBron James, 4,800.2. Okay, significantly higher than Magic, almost as close as Jordan, because Jordan was like 50, I forgot what it was. Let's see, Jordan
5,400,
was 5,491. Larry Bird, 4,104. Interestingly enough, he's higher than Magic. Okay, and that's a lot of people's arguments. Who's better at a Magic and Larry, right?
Yeah.
And everybody talks all over the place about that one, right? You know, everybody has their points on who's better between those two. Well, the numbers say that Larry Bird is actually a better player than Magic was, right?
Yep.
But 300 basis points. But look at Julius Erving, bro. 4,050.4.
We forget. Now, for those of you that don't know, we did confirm. This includes Dr. J's ABA stats as well. And for those youngsters that don't know what the hell the ABA was, ABA was another competitor to the NBA, which the NBA acquired and ended up bringing a lot of the teams that you have, Indiana Pacers, the New Jersey Nets at the time. There's a handful of teams that came into the league from that ABA acquisition. And so this does include Dr. J's ABA stats.
Yep, exactly. Yeah. So they're interesting though, bro, right? I mean, this is kind of shaking a lot of people's, like, you know, paradigms. It's like, what? No.
Well, the one thing that I noticed instantly is this, up until this point, the small forwards are the highest, as a total group, the highest ranking score.
Until we get to the one of the other categories.
I understand.
You're right.
We got two more positions to go over, but
correct.
Up until now, this is the most competitive and the highest scoring. All right, on to the next one.
Go to the next one. Again, this is episode 40 subjective list that we came up with, and we kind of put it in this order, right? We said Karl Malone, Charles Barkley, although I think I had Charles Barkley first, you had Karl Malone. You know, we argued that one. We both said Tim Duncan. Yeah. And this is one that I think we picked unanimously. I think we all picked the same players on this one on episode 40, right?
Correct.
So when I went ahead and punched in the numbers, check this out. Karl Malone, 37-39. Charles Barkley. Oh, let me go ahead and, PGI Index. Before you do that, look at who number one was. Bob Pettit. Bob Pettit was number one. Tim Duncan, number two. Karl Malone, number three. Dirk Nowitzki, number four. Charles Barkley was nowhere to be seen, bro. All right?
Yeah.
So here are the numbers. All right. Karl Malone, 37-39.2. Barkley didn't even crack 3,000, but it's a respectable number, right?
It is a respectable number.
4,000 range. Dirk Nowitzki barely cracked 3,000. Look at Bob Pettit, dude. 41-19.8. That's legit, dude. I mean, that's like high. Now, to be fair, some of these players that were from the 50s and 60s, we couldn't record their turnovers. We couldn't record their steals. We couldn't record their blocks, right?
They weren't always recorded.
They weren't keeping track of that. So 1973-74 is when they started taking, you know, keeping track of blocks and steals. And I think turnovers was like 2 or 3 years later after that, right? So right around there from what I remember. But anyway, but you can see that going back to this list, this is what our PGI index says should be the Mount Rushmore for power forwards in this order. Okay.
Yep. You ask anybody today who's the greatest power forward of all time, and they'll tell you Tim Duncan. They won't drop a hat. They'll tell you Tim Duncan.
Correct.
And obviously, based on our PGI, not the case.
Correct.
Not only is it not the case, he's significantly behind Bob Pettit.
Correct. Significantly. Look at the number. We go back here. Charles. Actually, Bob Pettit was 41-19, and Tim Duncan was – yeah, so he's about like almost 50 points behind.
Yep.
Okay. That's significant.
This is fascinating. I love this, dude.
Dude, it's interesting, huh? All right, man. So let's go to the last category, bro. And the last category is the center.
All right, again, the big boys.
This is the subjective number. This is the subjective list that we created in episode 440 that we went ahead and argued. And I argued, bro, that Nikola Jokic should be on this list.
You did. And I was kind of Bill Russell should be up there.
Yeah. Right?
Now let's keep in mind. So one thing to be fair, and I highly unlikely, I'm going to acknowledge that. But Jokic's career isn't done. There is the possibility that he either stays or drops in score based on turnovers. Probably not going to happen. Extremely unlikely. But I'm just saying, Jokic is the one that isn't cemented. Right? Some of these players, Durant, they're not cemented into the score that they have.
Right. Right. Well, you know what? I just realized that I didn't put someone down. So let me just go ahead. And punch this one up real quick because I got to edit. So I'm gonna go ahead and make one edit real quick.
Yep.
So
in this, like I was saying, in this, Eddie pushed for the Joker. I thought Bill Russell should have been in here. And so those were my four. My four were Kareem, Wilt, Hakeem, and Bill, with the acknowledgement that Joker's on his way and. I think that Eddie's index is going to show that Joker's more than just on his way.
Correct. So let me go ahead and I'm just finishing up the last edit here. And I'm going to save it. All right. So this is the list that we came up with. Now, yep. Go to the PGI index so we can see what this is the actual order.
Yeah.
Wilt Chamberlain was number one over Kareem, bro. Yep.
That
was surprising.
Yes.
That was very surprising.
Yes, because anyone that's been on this show has heard me. I've argued that Kareem should be considered the greatest in the conversation between Jordan and LeBron, and I thought Kareem has an argument for being considered the greatest. And clearly, he's not even in this stat. He's not even the greatest center.
Correct. Now, real quick, I did make a mistake here. My first mistake of the evening, bro. Okay? Now, is there a way that you can make an edit to this slide right now?
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead and take out.
Let me stop sharing.
Go ahead. It's real quick. Take out Nikola Jokic and put Bill Russell there. Instead of Nikola Jokic, put in Bill Russell.
In the PGI index.
Yes. Okay. Yes. Go ahead and put Bill Russell in there and then save it. And then I'm going to go ahead and show the numbers at the end here because I actually forgot to put one of the players in there. And then when you're ready, go ahead and redisplay it so everybody sees it. And. All right, man. All right, cool. Here we go. So this is now the PGI index order. It's actually Wilt Chamberlain number one.
So I was right. So all I'm hearing in this
correct.
Conversation
is that's right. Correct. You were right. Bill Russell should have been there instead of Nikola Jokic, right? But the other edit that I wanted to go ahead and show you is that actually Nikola Jokic was above Hakeem. So Nikola Jokic should be the last guy on that. And I should have told you to go ahead and take out Hakeem and put in Nikola Jokic because it should be Chamberlain, Jabbar, Russell, Jokic. Okay? So if you can go ahead and do that, and while you do that, I'm going to show the numbers here. But check it out. The PGI index shows that Abdul-Jabbar is 5306.8. Wilt Chamberlain, 5338.8. This is higher than Jabbar. Bill Russell, 5009.1, okay? And then look at Nikola Jokic. He's higher than Hakeem Olajuwon.
That breaks my heart, Eddie. Breaking my heart.
No, I know, because that was he's my favorite player of all time, too, man. He is. Yeah, he's my favorite player of all time. But, dude, what we're seeing from Jokic is, like, otherworldly, okay? What we're seeing from him right now is otherworldly. So this is the Mount Rushmore of centers according to the PGI Index. It's Chamberlain, Jabbar, Russell, Jokic. We were both right, okay? We were both right in having Jokic. I was right in Jokic. You were right in Russell. And we were both wrong to have a team up there.
A team.
According to our process, right?
Yeah.
Right, so.
But in all fairness, I knew I was playing a little favorite with Hakeem. I needed him in there.
Yeah. So, hey, Lewis says this segment is awesome. Right on. Yeah. Thanks, Lewis.
Awesome.
Right on, man. So, all right. All right, bro. So anyway, this is it. This we went ahead and covered all the playoffs. Right, the three series that remain. We talked about the Cavaliers, you know, essentially are now, you know, going back home and they're on vacation at Cancun or wherever they're planning to go. Then we talked about this index, this player greatness index that Twan and I created about a week and a half ago, and we've been revising. This is going to be an evolving thing, right? And we'd love to get your input, your insight. And next week, you know, what we're planning to do is that we're going to go ahead and show the top 75 NBA players of all time. As, you know, anointed by the NBA, you know, back a couple years ago when Klay Thompson, remember, he was pissed that he was in number 77. Because 76 players were chosen because there was a tie at 75, right? So we're going to go ahead and show the top 76, the subjective list that ESPN provided, and they put it in order, okay? And then we're going to compare that to what our numbers say should be the order. And then we have a system to kind of show from a number standpoint, like if we were off by, you know, X amount of slots, then it's a certain number if it's or a certain color if it's, you know, exactly, we will highlight that. So we have, it's a fun segment. That's what we're going to cover next week on top of the NBAs. But anyway, this is our show, man. This is episode 48.
So I did have something to add.
Oh, good. Go ahead.
For you Eagle Eyes out there who argue who the greatest player is, if you go back and watch, you'll get your answer, at least for the people that are commonly talked about.
Yes.
You'll get your answer because Eddie showed you the answer. I'm not going to tell you who it was. I'll make you guys go back and watch it. But
like who the highest guy out of everybody was.
Out of who the highest guy was out of the people that are typically argued.
Yes.
Right? Typically the argue, you know, we know who those are. I'm not even going to say the names because we all know who argues for the greatest of all time.
Based
on our system, you have your answer.
You have your answer.
Go back and rewatch.
Yep. So by next week, everybody, you're going to see who are the top 10 through our index. Our PGI index will reveal who the top 10 of all time is compared to what everybody subjectively has been saying who the top 10 have been. Again, there is no bias to this. That's the beauty of numbers. There's no bias to numbers, man. It's just a system. You can go ahead and just, debunk the system, right? You can say, oh, you should put more points. It's like you're twisting a knob here and there. And that. You're still twisting knobs. It's going to affect things otherwise, right?
Correct.
You can easily, like if I put a lot of points on championships, which I made it only 80 points, right? But if I made that, because I wanted to kind of make it more individualized, right? Because the championships is a team thing, right? It's not an individual thing. It's a team thing. So it shouldn't be weighed as high as like an MVP, for instance, right?
Correct.
MVP is like double the points, right? So we went ahead. But if we wanted to go ahead and say, oh, you should give more points to, the championship, well, Bill Russell's going to kill everybody. Bottom line. Right?
So that's exactly right. And that's been my argument all along. Which knob do you want us to turn?
Correct. Correct. So this is the fairest way that we can think of right now.
Correct.
I mean, again, this is going to evolve, right? But for right now, this is the fairest system we can come up with where it makes sense, right? Because we wanted to kind of highlight the individual achievement of a player, not necessarily the team, because the championship is a team effort, not a personal effort, right?
Correct.
But
if you think we should give more points, tell us, and we'll put it in, and we'll see what the numbers come up.
Crunch it out, man. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, this is our show, episode 48. We're only two episodes away from episode 50, and I've already revealed who our guest is going to be. JJ Stokes is going to be on here to talk basketball, believe it or not, because he actually was a basketball player and actually could have played for UCLA, believe it or not, but he had the scholarship for football. But we're going to talk about his journey in the NFL, a little bit about his basketball. He's a basketball fan. Of course, he's a Laker fan. We'll get into that. And we'll talk a little bit about his personal life and how we got to know each other and all that. And feel free to ask him any questions out there, right? Yeah. So, that'll be here on May 28th, 50th episode here live at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. We're here every Wednesday live. We are the Cisco Kids. I'm Eddie Aparicio. This is Anthony Tuan Corral. We are brought to you by grumblingsmedia.com. You can find us at any podcast outlet you can think of, such as Spotify, Google, Apple, YouTube, Pandora, X, Facebook, you name it. You can find us. Just go ahead and type up grumblingsmedia.com. And you can also type up maybe even this player greatness index might be up there.
Yeah, right? Maybe.
You never know, right? But we're going to go ahead and continue our coverage of the NBA next week, of all the playoffs. And I'm sure we're going to have the finals already determined by that time. And maybe we might even have actually the games are not going to start until, the June, I think, is when it happens anyway. But we'll find out who the finals are. And then we'll continue our talk about this PGI index next week. Yeah. We're going to talk about the top 75. Go ahead.
One parting shot. For you conspiracy theorists out there. What are your thoughts about Dallas winning the Cooper
flag? Oh, yeah, that's right. The Cooper flag sweepstakes. They won it. Dude, I'm telling you, man. Nico Harrison, man, he pulled it off, man.
Dude, I'm telling you, dude.
He saved his job, dude.
I'm going to tell you something right now. If there's any Dallas fans out there, please, I have a question for you. Would you rather have the team before they traded away Luka? Or would you rather have a team that has both Cooper Flagg and Anthony Davis?
All right, Ron. Anyway, until next week, everyone, have a good rest of the week, and we're signing off. Take care, everyone.